get, like, afraid to touch and handle certain things. So I definitely, like, remind myself that it's, like, not too much to stress about. Because, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I cannot thank you guys enough for sacrificing not only your days and your time, but for working with this crew and with me. It's been just an absolute pleasure and continues to be an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting us onto the crew.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I want to also thank you, the audience. We're having a lot of thank yous going around today. Thank you for listening today. This program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. All you have to do is search for Generation Now. Again, I'd like to thank Natalie Lothar and Abigail Walentowski for their hard work this season and hopefully continuing. Until next time, bye, everybody.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to another Saturday morning edition of the program Education Matters on WGTD Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Rasmussen, and have recently become part of the host rotation for the program, taking the place of Dwayne Olson, who relocated to the Minneapolis area. I am excited to host this program and look forward to sharing with you topics that have an impact on education in our area. Well, it's been a little over a month since the beginning of a new school year for students in Wisconsin, and that includes students attending both the Kenosha and Racine Unified School Districts. By this time, students and teachers are hopefully settled into their daily routines, with all things running smoothly on a day-to-day basis. Our two program guests this morning, I'm sure, will be able to attest to this. Tanya Reuter and Stacy Tapp are the communications and public relations persons for their respective school district. Tanya from the Kenosha Unified School District and Stacy from the Racine Unified School District. Good morning and welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Let's begin by having you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourselves, your history with your respective districts, how long you've been in your current positions in charge of communications, and some of your job responsibilities. Tanya, let's start with you.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. This is my eighth school year with Kenosha Unified School District, and in my role, it's the Chief Communications Officer. I oversee the crisis communications, media relations, as well as just providing strategic leadership to the district as part of the Leadership Council. I also oversee our communications team, which is in charge of our website, graphic design, video, community school relations, as well as a number of other things, just basically promoting our students to our community in general.
And are you from the Kenosha area?
I am not. I'm not far away. Franklin is where I grew up.
Okay.
So, but I did marry a Kenoshan. So my husband, you know, the typical Curtis Strange, Bull and Bradford, whenever you meet somebody from Kenosha, they tend to list their three schools that they went to. So
it's the same in Racine.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And Stacy, how about you?
This will be my 10th year in Racine Unified. I don't know how the years fly by so fast. And very similar to Tanya, we know each other well. Our departments are set up very similar in Racine Unified and Kenosha Unified. We handle much the same work, everything from internal and external communications. I think one thing people forget is that our districts tend to be one of the largest employers in our respective communities. And so while it's really our at the forefront that our job is to communicate to our publics and let people know what were the great things happening in our schools every day, we also have 3,000 or more staff members that we also are internally communicating to and keeping engaged, creating positive climates in our schools and our buildings. We also, I think Tanya does some of this as well, but we also oversee family and community engagement in Racine Unified through the communications office. So while one part of our job is really focused on the media relations, the internal, external comms, crisis communications, the other side of the team handles family and community engagement and really building partnerships with our families to ensure that our students are successful.
Well, obviously, all of the responsibilities you both have would be too much for one person to handle. So, Stacy, how many people make up your department?
We have three, two others, including myself, focused on the communication, PR side of the house. And then we have three staff members who focus on family and community engagement.
Okay. And Tanya, how about in Kenosha?
We're set up just a little bit differently. We have one who is a rock star at our community school relations, and she has a few support staff that help her out. And then we have three others who do our communication side and social media, graphics, website.
And I know the two of you do know each other. How did you establish your relationship? Just through the jobs?
I think school communications in general across the state and really across the country is a very a collaborative type industry. We are we network quite a bit and connect often as much as we can, though we're very busy. It's hard for us to get together, but we do try to get together occasionally, and we see each other at conferences and things. We are it's a challenging role to be in, I would say. School communications is extremely challenging, and we have a lot of, especially between our two districts, we have a lot of similarities. So it's nice to be able to bounce ideas off one another, talk through challenges. When you're working with 3,000 staff members and, you know, thousands and thousands of students every day, different and unique challenges pop up all the time. So there's always someone in our field across the state who's willing to pick up the phone and talk through that with us. And Tanya's been one of those people for me. So we really appreciate that relationship.
I think you need that. I remember back in the day when I was teaching and first became a principal, I think it was Linda Flashinsky, mm-hmm. who was in Racine Unified in your role. And it was a part-time position. And today, 2019, I can't even imagine that position with all that's involved being a part-time position. It has to be staffed by somebody full-time. So I know we appreciate what you do, even if you're not told that all the time. Well, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, school's been in session now for a little over a month. Overall, how did things go back in early September as your districts began this current 2019-2020 school year? Tanya, how about in Kenosha?
We've actually been back in session since August 5th. We have two extended year schools. So we had Franklin Wilson, who came back. They're two elementary schools in Kenosha Unified, and that went flawlessly. And then in September, we had the rest of our 20,000-some students return as well to join us, and it went really well. You know, the first day, the first week is always such an exciting time in the school district. You have just a slight lull almost in July where your district office is crazy busy preparing for the upcoming year. A lot of people tend to think that when school is out, that everybody's out, but that's not the case. When it comes to your district office, that tends to be one of your busiest times as you prepare for the return of your students. But there's always something missing when the students aren't in school. It's just not as fun. You're not hearing the stories. You're not hearing about the learning. And so when they return, it's just like this big, exciting welcome back. And I think for us, it went really smoothly. And, you know, you had the parents who cried when the kindergartners are going. You had the other parents who were celebrating a little bit because summer is finally coming to an end. And they, you know, they're ready for their kids to be back in school. So for us, I think it was a really great start to the year.
I would echo that in Racine Unified. You know, when I'm out in the community at events with my kids and things like that, I'll bump into teachers or school administrators. In the first few weeks of school, my main question is, how's it going? You know, how was the start of the year? How'd it go? And everywhere I've gone and every teacher, staff member, principal that I have talked to has said, you know, it's been a great start. Lots of smiles. Very, you know, they seem very authentically excited about this school year. So we're really excited. You know, every year's a little different when you've been in it for a while. And this year had a really positive feel to it.
Absolutely. All right. Great. Well, I'm sure some of our listeners would be interested in knowing your district enrollments for the current school year. And I know we based this on what's called the Third Friday Count. Can you explain what the Third Friday Count is, its importance to all Wisconsin school districts, and how these numbers compare to last school year in your district? Stacy, start with you.
Sure. So the Third Friday Count is really important to us because this is where our funding comes from. It's calculated based on the number of students that we have in our schools, and that's our primary funding for the school year. And so that Third Friday in September, we encourage families to make sure their kids are in schools that day so they can be counted. And then we report that to the Department of Public Instruction, who, again, then we vet those numbers, and that determines our funding for the year.
It, same for us. You know, obviously attendance is important every single day, because if your child's not in the classroom, then they can't be learning. And the most important thing is for them to be in school learning so that they can have the best success possible throughout the year. Unfortunately, DPI does have that requirement that you have to give them a certain number because that's where the funding is tied. It doesn't mean that that date is the most important to the district by any means. It just means that there's a requirement being put on us, right, by somebody else, and we have to adhere to that. The nice thing with Third Friday is that Friday is the most important. However, there are catch-up pieces. For us in particular in Kenosha Unified, we happened to have two threats the night before Third Friday, which was really unfortunate. And so our attendance was somewhat low. However, DPI has a piece where if the students are also present the day before and the day after, they can still be counted in those enrollments. So while that Friday is very important, there are pieces that allow us to capture that. And again, the funding is not, it's not about the funding for the school district. It's that that funding is what allows us to provide the curriculum, the programs, the extracurriculars, all of the important pieces for the students and the children in our community. It's not about just money for the district. It pays for our staff salaries, which puts teachers and support staff in front of the children of our community, and that's the most important piece.
And I do remember the importance as a building principal at the middle school and the elementary school level, making sure that I harped on the PA in the morning announcements the week before, as well as getting messages sent home to parents saying it's important that your child is present. But I do know what you're talking about when there are some exceptions to that staunch. You know, it's not just that Friday. You've got those other opportunities to make those counts. And I know how, as a principal, how important those counts were. Okay. It's only recently that the University of Wisconsin Parkside, after revamping its education department, has realized an increase in the number of students preparing for a career in the field of education as teachers. We keep hearing about the shortage of certified teachers across the country and in our own state of Wisconsin. How did your district fare with the number of resignations and retirements at the end of last year? And were the district successful in hiring certified teachers to fill all teacher vacancies? Is there any specific subject area where there is still what seems to be a shortage of certified instructors? Stacy?
Well, we didn't see any big, you know, change. We see fairly similar numbers in retirements and vacancies each year. But this is not a new challenge for us. It's been an ongoing challenge for several years, especially in, we call them hard to fill areas. So those positions for us, and I would assume it's very similar in Kenosha, special ed, CTE, career and tech ed, and our bilingual educators. Those are very hard to fill positions for us. And so sometimes you will see teachers on provisional license in our classrooms working towards those degrees. One thing that we are really excited about in Racine that we started a year ago as a partnership with UW-Parkside is a residency program. We call it the STAR program. So we're in its second year this year, and this is an effort to increase our educational staff, our highly our licensed, highly qualified educators in those hard-to-fill positions. So our first cohort is a group of special education educators, and they are in our classrooms 4 days a week. We place them at one of our schools. So they're teaching, they're earning an entry-level teacher salary. And then on Fridays, they go to UW-Parkside for their classroom experience. And they have a mentor teacher through the district. And that cohort, I've been told by some of these, the participants, is really helpful because they're going through this together. But hopefully at the end of this year in June, this will be they'll finish up their second year of doing this, and they will be, they will get their licenses and be fully qualified special education teachers. The benefit for Racine Unified is, of course, that now we've got 16 more special education teachers licensed, and we have an agreement, a retention agreement, that they'll stay in the district. Of course, we hope they'll stay on well beyond that. But this is just one way that we're looking. We've been able to get some grant money to help fund this, and so we're hoping to be able to continue it in the future and use, create additional cohorts, potentially bilingual or CTE, things like that.
Now, are there other districts that have something similar to the STAR program?
I think that we are we are on the front end on this. I know that DPI was really excited when we launched the program. I would love to see a lot of other districts have this, because I know we're all facing some of those same teacher shortages.
Yes, I mean, Kenosha Unified is not unique to that either. Same kind of list, including positions such as nursing, psychs, PT, OT, that kind of position. They are just hard to find. You just don't have a lot of graduates coming out with those degrees, and so it makes it a little bit more difficult as you're fighting 400 and some school districts throughout the state of Wisconsin to place those individuals into the positions. We are in very early talks, something a little bit different, but a Grow Your Own program, so trying to find our students in Kenosha who are interested in the teaching pathway and trying to get them to be engaged and continue to follow that through college, and hoping to partner with our local universities. And we are kind of lucky in Kenosha that we have Parkside and Carthage in our backyard. Yes. And so they tend to work with us closely for student teaching. And then that helps, because once the student teach with us, they tend to say, okay, well, now how can I become employed, whether it's Kenosha or Racine, being right here in their backyard. That does help us quite a bit, I think. When you talk about the shortage, I don't know as much as the shortage is affecting us in Kenosha as much as just those hard-to-fill positions is more of our issue. We also are in the same boat. We kind of have the same traditional 200 postings every year, be it through retirements or the fact that we just had some federal grant positions, and we tend to post those as a one-year contract versus a contract that's ongoing. And so we haven't had this big uptick where we're fighting to fill just your general classroom positions. It just tends to be those hard-to-fill positions where students are just not coming out of college with the degrees necessary.
I can relate to what you're saying. I went to Dominican College, which of course is now defunct, and graduated in 1973. I was lucky to get a teaching internship, and they no longer exist, where I worked an entire semester at Gifford when it was a junior high school, and I taught three classes and was a paid member of the staff, which I was lucky enough then to be hired on the following school year, which led to my 16 years as a classroom teacher and 22 years as a principal in Racine Unified. So I can relate. If you could, hook them in, there's a better chance of getting them to, be hired on and continue. So that's a good thing. All right. It seems that every district undergoes changes to enhance learning on an almost yearly basis. Can you fill our listeners in on any of the innovative changes that have been introduced in any of the curricular areas for this school year? Would you care to talk about any new programs being introduced in your districts?
This year, our biggest one would be we're rolling out Bridges Math, and that's a huge undertaking. Again, you know, Stacy had shared how large we are, you know, 20,000 students, 4,000 employees. And so when you're talking about trying to roll out new curriculum and trying to train all of the educators on the new curriculum as well, it's a long process. So we actually start over the summer, and the teachers come in and they start learning the curriculum over the summer so they can start rolling it out in the fall. And then we also have family education nights in part with the communications department to try to help parents understand what we're trying to roll out so that they can also help their students or their children at home when it comes down to it. But it is really a big undertaking, and this is our new elementary math curriculum that we are rolling out.
You know, that's one of the big comments I hear from parents frequently. I don't know how to help my kid with math anymore. It's not like when I was going to school. So you mentioned something about parent nights. Could you mention what they're about?
Yeah, in Kenosha, they were traditionally called Chat and Chew. Now we call them parent education programs. But our elementary schools tend to partner with our community school relations department, and they'll host evenings at school where the parents can come in and we just discuss the curriculum. Particularly math nights happen to be a very popular one, and we'll have hundreds of families who show up at our individual elementary schools, and they spend the night just learning about the curriculum, but also helping their children apply what they're learning so that when they go home, they are able to better help their students throughout the school year.
All right. And what's going on with math and Unified?
Well, we have introduced a lot of new curriculum over the last several years. So we are still, I would echo Tanya, it's a learning curve for educators, as I'm sure you know, Jeff. So we're spending this year kind of continuing to get staff up to speed on curriculum that we've introduced in the last couple of years. But we're very excited this year. If you've heard of our Academies of Racine model at our three comprehensive high schools, Case, Horlick, and Park, we're really excited because this year is the first year that what we're calling is wall to wall. So the freshman class who started with the program will graduate this year. They're our seniors this year. So now officially every student in our high schools will have that academy experience, get exposure to hands-on learning, apprenticeships, job shadowing, college visits, job fairs, you know, all these opportunities that are introduced by the academy model. And we're continuing to build partnerships with our business partners and post-secondary partners in the community to expand those opportunities. So that's really exciting for us this year. And I have to give a shameless plug for Gateway. Last night, we held our board meeting at Gateway at the IMET Center in Sturtevant, and Dr. Brian Albrecht was kind enough to give our board members a tour of the new new classroom space, the expansion, and it is so exciting to see what is happening out there with the real school. Those kids are having the opportunity to use the IMET Center, some of that advanced technology. They're taking engineering courses and advanced manufacturing, and to hear Brian talk about it last night was just really exciting, and to see the robotics, the high tech. There's virtual learning or virtual reality space, the advanced technology that our students are getting exposed to out at the IMET is just one example of a tremendous partnership in the community that's giving our kids exposure to real world learning.
My granddaughter is a senior at the real school, and so I've been keeping up with what's happening with the partnership between REAL and SC Johnson and the IMAT mm-hmm. Center. And I believe it was Kurt Schursel, the principal there, who put something on Facebook indicating the fact that students, once they're fully involved with this program, have the opportunity of accumulating 22 college-level credits going towards the field of engineering. Mm-hmm. If they continue with the program at the real school. So that is really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the amount of money our families are saving doing those dual credit courses, it's just amazing.
And there are other high schools that give students the opportunity to pick up those early college credits while in high school, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. All of our high schools mm-hmm. have those opportunities.
Okay, in Kenosha?
Same in Kenosha, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we know that parents play a key role when it comes to the education of their kids. After all, parents are their children's first teachers. What are some of the ways parents can become more involved in their children's schools and education? If I'm a parent listening to this program this morning, what type of volunteer opportunities are available at both the school and the district level, and how do I go about becoming a volunteer, either in a classroom or in a building? Tanya?
I think in Kenosha Unified, we have a multitude of different options. Whether you want to actually volunteer in your own child's classroom, a lot of times at the elementary level, any elementary teacher would take the extra hands in the classroom, whether it be helping them check off homework or just volunteering to be an extra set of hands, cutting out supplies, getting things prepared for upcoming classroom projects, things like that. We also have some really great partnerships in our community. So we have mentoring programs with CAFASI and CABA, and that allows you to go in and not just help your own child, but to help other children succeed as well, just through a mentoring type program. Through the United Way of Kenosha, we also have Readers Are Leaders, which is a full-on tutoring program, and they provide training, and you actually are partnered with a child for an entire school year in order to help them raise their reading levels. And that's been, it started at McKinley, and now we have multiple schools. So we are at Wilson and Forest Park, a couple others, and they're always looking for additional tutors. And again, they provide that training with the goal to help our students become better readers by third grade. So you might be partnered with somebody from kindergarten through third grade via that program. But certainly we have many other ways that our families can just become involved for their own child's sake, and that's attending your parent-teacher conferences, just reaching out to your teacher, letting them know if there's anything happening in your own child's life, whether good, bad, or indifferent, just so that the teacher can help personalize the learning in the classroom based on what's happening at home, asking some of the key questions, how can I help my child better at home, what can I be adjusting in my child's day or night in order to better support you in the classroom, and just making that school and home relationship an important priority so that the student knows that the parents are also connected to the teachers.
Now, PTAs or PTOs have been around a long time. Does Kenosha have a strong PTA or PTO program within the district?
We do. Not all of our schools have them, but where they do exist, they are really great. And there's a council for PTO, and we have PTO and PTA, so it varies based on the school. But it just depends on which schools have which program. It's not consistent across the district.
And I know in Racine we have PTAs and PTSAs, mm-hmm. Parent-teacher associations and parent-teacher-student associations. Tanya? Stacy? sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah, we do. We have both. Very similar to Kenosha Unified. I would echo a lot of what Tanya said. We have, it's not consistent at every school, but where we have them, they're very strong. There are many other ways to get involved as a parent in the district. I would say the first thing is you have to become WINGS approved, so you got to get your background check done. That's available on our website. That's kind of the first step in becoming a volunteer in the district. Then you have access. You can be welcomed into any school and do any kind of volunteering you're interested in. We also, United Way of Racine County, has what is called Schools of Hope, a very similar, sounds like, reading tutoring program. Hundreds of volunteers in our schools providing support to hundreds of students to get their reading levels up, and we've seen some early success with that program, so that's been really exciting. And again, and in Racine too, always looking for more tutors. So if you're someone who has a little bit of spare time, an hour or two a week, it's a really easy way to get into the schools and help. And they do provide training. You don't have to be an educator or somebody who knows how to tutor in reading. They'll train you up. We also have a program called Mentor RUSD if you're interested in becoming a student mentor, which I have done for the past several years. Started with a student in kindergarten, and it's so rewarding to see those kids grow. So I would absolutely encourage somebody who's interested in providing that mentorship. So many of our kids need strong adult mentors in their lives. So if you're a parent or a community member who wants to get involved in a different way, that's something you can do. And then specifically with our parents, we have a new program. It kind of evolved from what was our Parent Key Communicator Group. It's become the Parent Leadership Network. And this is another phenomenal way that parents can get involved and really become parent leaders in our schools. We provide, through our family engagement team, we provide training for those parents who want to be leaders in their schools and help build that. So they're supporting not only their own children in their classrooms, but they're supporting their entire school and really building their leadership capacity, serving in a role where they can engage more parents to get involved. Because like you said, we know that that partnership with our parents is integral to our student success. So we're always looking for parents to become more involved in whatever way that they can. We know how busy families are. Sometimes coming to conferences or events at the school just isn't feasible. But, we want to work with parents around what works for them.
Maybe we could put a plug in for upcoming conferences.
Yes.
Because I know they happen in November. So that is really right around the corner.
Yes.
And those, I think, are very important. As president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, I am familiar with Schools of Hope. And I think recently we just posted something on our Facebook page to try to get members who are retired educators to become more involved in volunteering, in their mm-hmm. schools. So hopefully we can get the word out when there are volunteer opportunities. By checking out the RAREA Facebook page and the Kenosha has a Facebook page?
Correct, yep.
And Kenosha a website. Yep. And I know Unified certainly has a Facebook page and a website. So back to the parent component. What do you think is the one most important thing parents need to do today to support their kids and their schools?
I would say, I would echo some of what Tanya said. Ask questions, be involved. We know, and that's different for every parent. It looks different for every parent. We have parents that work two and sometimes more jobs, and so coming to the school for conferences at a certain set time doesn't always work. Some of our parents, they might not have transportation. That might be a barrier for them. So it looks different for every parent. I would say talking to your child, checking those backpacks, asking questions, and then finding ways to connect with your child's teacher is really important, especially at that early level, making those connections with the classroom teacher. Teachers always want to build those relationships. The challenge is sometimes figuring out how and what works for each parent, because we're all, I'm very engaged with my kids in their schools, but with this job, it's extremely busy, and it is really hard for mm-hmm. me to get to some events at schools in the afternoons or evenings. But there are other ways that I make sure that I'm checking grades and keeping in touch with my kids and their teachers. So I would say just figuring out how you can be involved in connecting and talking with your child about what's going on at school.
Okay, Tanya?
Right, yes, and agreed. And I think it's just making sure that your children know that it's an alliance between the parents or guardians mm-hmm. and the school teacher, that it's not the parent and guardian versus the teacher. It's an alliance that is there, and the goal is to help your child see educational success at the end of the road.
Right, and I know with parents' work schedules today, grandparents, a lot of times, of which I'm one, do a lot. Mm-hmm. I pick up my grandson from Red Apple, where he's a first grader, and when we get to our house, because his mom and dad are both working, the first thing we do is open up that backpack and check that folder to see what has come home, either notices or announcements, or we'll look through the paperwork that he's sending home to see what he did that particular day. So opening up that backpack is very, very important. It's a good way to find out what is, taking place in the child's classroom. All right. What do you feel is the one most pressing issue facing public education today, specifically within your respective school districts, and what do you see as the way to make things better or stronger? Tough question.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
As I reflect on this question, the thing I think about is just how how much has changed in the past decades around education. And I think public schools are just expected to take on so much more than they were, 20, 30, 40 or more years ago. And I give a really easy, simple example because we're reviewing our facilities right now and looking at the challenges that some of our really old 1800s and early 1900s buildings are the challenges that they're giving us. When schools were built, we built gymnasiums. And that was a time when kids went home for lunch. They walked home, they lunched, they came back. So the gym space was fine. Nowadays, we use that gym space to serve potentially one, two, maybe even three meals a day to some of our students. So that space is very tight. We're using it for auditorium space, for gathering the students together. We're using it for lunch, and we're using it for physical education. So trying to make use of buildings that were built in a time that was very different is a fiscal and, it's a fiscal challenge for us. And so that's a simple example, but I think about mental health. We have 5 mental health clinics in school-based mental health clinics in elementary schools right now. That wasn't something that we were expected to provide back years and years ago. And so while we're really excited to be sort of a front runner in that area of providing support to students with mental health needs, it's also, again, a fiscal challenge, and that's something that as a district we have to be able to staff with some people with the right expertise in those areas. So I think from my perspective, it's just the biggest challenge facing education is, the so many expectations of our educators and of our public schools, and we know how important it is to educate the whole child. We know that a student can't be successful if they come to school and all they can think about is how hungry they are or, what happened at home last night, or they're suffering from some sort of mental health challenge. We know we have to support the whole child or they're not going to be successful. So it's just finding the resources, the supports, the partnerships in the community that can help us make those things happen for our kids.
Mm-hmm. And I would piggyback. My first thought was immediately the mental health piece. And we also have some school-based programs that we've implemented, some school-based mental health sites that we are piloting and rolling out with some great community partnerships. But the hard part is you have staff when these when our educators go to college, it's not like they're prepared in the realm of mental health. And so somebody who's maybe been an educator for 20 years and these are more the emerging issues, it's trying to provide all of that training. And again, when you're talking about training educators, their first priority is being in the classroom with our students. And so trying to find the time to educate them on these new and upcoming issues, it becomes problematic. And especially when you have a huge district, then you're paying for sub costs. And again, it's all this fiscal pieces and time pieces, and it becomes a struggle for us. And not to mention that the mental health is of our students, but also of our families. Unfortunately, we have families, parents, guardians who also struggle with mental health issues, which impact the children who may not be the actual person, but they tend to be the victim in the whole realm of things. And just as a community and as a nation, we're not necessarily providing the mental health supports that are necessary for those parents or guardians. And so then you have these young children coming to school with the trauma that they've faced because of whatever their parents might be facing at home. And so it's this much bigger piece that goes beyond our schools, but it certainly impacts us in a very serious way. And so trying to navigate that and figure it out and trying to find how do we get more supports for our communities, for our students, for our schools and our teachers. And I think we have a long road ahead of us in that area.
I do too. And I saw firsthand where we have more and more students who are coming into the schools carrying a lot more baggage. Mm-hmm. And it has an effect not only on the other students in the classrooms, but on the administrators, the teachers, and the support staff in each building. And you're right, I think it's a big piece, and we have to continually address that. I can also relate, Stacy, to the fact that I remember as a principal at having to put a schedule together at Roosevelt Elementary in Racine, where I was principal, because we used the gym as a lunchroom as well. Mm-hmm. And that drove the schedule as far as specialists, Phi Ed in particular. But it was like, you know, juggling balls because you only had that one space. Whereas there were other buildings at Unified that were more fortunate that they had two separate spaces. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely relate to that. I know what it's like to have to do that. So, all right. As we can begin to wind down our broadcast today, is there anything else that you would like to emphasize to our listeners that you feel needs to be said that we haven't covered?
I think you've covered a lot.
We have covered a lot.
You know, I would just say kind of, extending on to the previous question, I would just say, I know you asked, you know, what's the solution? Well, there's no easy solution, but I do think that in both our districts, we're very fortunate to have some really strong community partnerships. And, you know, it really does take a village to raise a child, especially children who have, who come with lots of challenges and needs, and some of our students do. And so those partnerships are so integral to the success of our districts. We would not have been able to implement school-based mental health clinics without the Children's Mental Health Collaborative, which was a great partnership. And now, you know, Children's Hospital is our partner in those clinics. And we even have a community-based clinic that offers support to kids all over the community, not just Racine Unified students too. So that's just one example of a fabulous partnership that is helping to support our students and their families, and in some cases supporting the staff at those buildings. I'm listening to Tanya talk and I'm thinking, and our staff also need mental health support because they're exposed to so many challenges every day, and the traumas that the kids bring to school, that, you know, some of our staff really need that kind of support as well. So I just think, you know, we're thankful in Racine Unified for the great deal of partnership that we have, and we're always looking for more opportunities and for more. Sometimes I think it can be hard to approach a school district and know what it is that you can offer. But there are so many ways, creative ways, that we're working together with partners. And like I said, with the academy models, just that the academies of Racine would not be where they are today, 4 years in, without the business partners and the post-secondary partners who've been at the table and are just as in it to see the kids succeed as we are.
And they sure have a vested interest, because Absolutely. Hopefully a lot of our students are going to become their future employees, the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Agreed, yeah. And I think just a shout out to our communities in general for all of the support, whether it's the parents, the grandparents, as you noted, everybody who comes together and really supports our schools. I mean, as some of the largest in the state, it's certainly no easy feat to continue to educate our students, but also offer some really highly regarded programs. I know in Kenosha Unified, we have some of the best fine arts programs in the state. Our athletics are wonderful. We have, you know, clubs, and all of these things happen because of the support of our community, and always wanting to make sure that our children in our community have what they need so that they grow up well-rounded, that they have the social emotional growth as well as the academic growth, and then those extracurriculars in place just to support the extra pieces to help them just really grow and flourish into wonderful adults who become members of our community in the future.
I see around the town on a lot of the billboards that the schools have, the signs, we see the leader in you. Has this become a theme for Racine Unified for the year?
See the leader in me is our theme this year. We try to kind of have a theme each year as we kick off the school year. We do an all-staff kickoff, and that is our theme this year. And really what that is about is seeing the leader in every single child. You know, whether it's the child who is extremely quiet, or the child who may be acting out, you know, it's getting to know, it's encouraging our employees wherever they are, whether they are a building engineer, a principal, a central office staff member, taking those opportunities to get to know each child and see the leader in each one of them, because we know that every child has so much untapped potential, and it's just building those relationships to ensure their success.
Well, we certainly know that there are more positive things going on in both districts, and that's a good thing. It's not the same public school it was 30, 40 years ago, as you mentioned, Stacy. And, you know, a lot of times you hear people my age who have not been involved in education say, well, that's not the way it was when I was in school, well, which is true. We're living in a whole different era. It's a whole brand new ballgame when it comes to educating our kids today. Well, you've been listening to Education Matters with our guests Tanya Reuter and Stacy Tapp, communication specialists for their respective school districts, the Kenosha Unified School District and the Racine Unified School District. I'm your host, Jeff Rasmussen. This was my premiere show, so I wanted to thank both Tanya and Stacy for being my guinea pigs and agreeing to come on the show today with a very timely topic. Thanks for tuning in. I will be with you again on Saturday, November 16th on WGTD Radio, 91.1 FM in Kenosha and Racine, 101.7 FM in Elkhorn, and 103.3 FM in Lake Geneva. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on